Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our webinar session. My name is Aggie Hertel, and our presenters are Kent Bussey of Transition One and developer of eProcess Manager, and Chris Spivey of MIS Group. MIS Group is our largest partner as well as the world's largest sage and timberline reseller. Chris's background in process and internal control as a partner at Tatum and an internal auditor at PepsiCo brings a great deal of acumen to the table. Our topic today is how to turn compliance initiatives into big profits. We're going to introduce you to a system that will help your clients cost-effectively manage all phases of financial reporting for SOX, SAS, and OMB Circular A123 compliance requirements. In this session, we will be discussing a powerful approach and methodology behind the new audit standards that will deliver real impact to the bottom line. eProcess Manager provides you with easy-to-use tools to map, execute, and monitor strategy, processes, risk, and control activities. It will help your clients automate much of what they are doing manually and also help to reduce the rising external auditors' costs. Finally, we will show you how you can help your clients go beyond compliance requirements to help them deliver results that will lead to business improvement initiatives that hit their bottom line in a measurable, visible format and in real time. This all adds up to big profits for you as you help your clients solve these pressing needs. I would like to now introduce Kent and Chris. For anyone that has any questions in the middle of this, you are free. Call at 866-590-4376 if you have any issues. And now here is Kent and Chris.
Welcome, everyone. This is Kent Bussey, and I want to thank you, Aggie, for the introduction. And I'd also really like to thank Chris Spivey, one of our top partners, out there to participate with us to kind of give some insight and ideas on how these types of initiatives can really add to the bottom line of the CPA firm or value-added resellers out there in the marketplace. And with that, Chris, if you'd like to highlight our agenda.
Thanks, Kent. Good morning, all. What we want to do today is we want to do a quick review of the top financial reporting compliance initiatives, talk about what it takes to satisfy those initiatives, how a VAR or CPA firm can differentiate itself using a tool such as EPM, look at steps along the way and talk about how we can help add value to your clients, set a stage for talking about compliance in terms of leveraging business process improvement, not just compliance for itself, and then help you think about how to get started and challenge you to get started. What we'd like to have happen is that you leave this webinar with ideas on how to leverage these concepts and get a return for your firm and your clients' firms in 90 days or less.
Sounds pretty exciting to me. So let's kind of take a look at the roots of where this whole compliance initiatives for financial reporting started. We've always heard that we're going to have this trickle-down impact by Sarbanes-Oxley. Pretty much everyone has heard of SOX. This is where public companies need to comply with financial reporting standards that were put in place by the government, two gentlemen, Sarbanes and Oxley, which came up with the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. The trickle-down has truly been starting to happen over the last year. In fact, today, starting this calendar year, private companies getting audits now have to comply with these new audit standards. Also, nonprofits, a lot of them get governmental funds, so they have to comply with OMB Circular A123. They also get audits, so they've got to comply with the new audit standards. And this is any company getting governmental funds that have to comply with both these standards. Also, governmental agencies, whether they're federal, state, and local, any agency that's actually getting federal funding needs to comply with OMB Circular A123. So with that, the big question is, who's next? I mean, how is this going to continue to trickle down? Is it going to impact your business or your clients' businesses out there, or has it already impacted them? So, Chris, why don't you, you know, kind of go over these ideas on, you know, it started with SOX, and what do these requirements mean to the companies out there?
Yeah, what that really means is that a company has to now provide the auditor, whether it's SOX, the SAS, or through VA 123, that management has to have a risk assessment of the impact of those risks on, potentially on financial reporting. They also have to be able to have documentation of their control environment and evaluation of its effectiveness. They also have to be able to show proof, evidence, that the key financial reporting controls are designed and operating as they were designed effectively. The auditor has to issue an opinion on financial reporting controls. It used to be that, especially for smaller companies, an auditor would go in and they would just basically say, we're going to ratchet the risk all the way up and we're just going to go totally substantive and we're going to test the heck out of the numbers. Well, the interpretation of these new statements on accounting standards says that is no longer possible. The auditor must do a specific audit program for each client based on a specific risk assessment. So no longer is it the, you know, you go and you pull the AP program out of the file, AP audit program out of the file and just execute it. You have to assess the risk and where materiality happens within AP as well. So what does that mean to a CPA firm or a VAR for your client? If you can take that trusted advisor role that everybody is talking about and trying to achieve, you've got the ability to help your clients understand visually in an automated fashion how their controls can help them hit their bottom line very quickly. You've got the ability to help companies understand how their processes work in an internal control environment, but also kind of from an operational and a compliance perspective, if you look at the whole tenet of COSO. If you understand how a control is designed, you've got a platform for evaluating whether or not automating it can take valuable resources, you know, with time, efficiency, or potentially labor out of a control process. So it really sets you up to have a foundation to have quick wins and be able to demonstrate them and show a quick payback for your clients. And I've never seen a client that's not appreciative of a demonstrable return happening very quickly when the meter's running.
So I guess you could almost say this little trickle down has literally turned into a waterfall. Anyway, Chris, based on your experience, just on the differentiation perspective as a value-added reseller, I know MIS Group has always prided itself as a differentiation or a differentiator type organization out there compared to a lot of VARs that are out there today. Does this truly help you win business, being able to position yourself where you go to, you know, this level with clients?
No, it's never helped us. I'm kidding, of course. I'm glad you asked that. I think what I'm finding is that, especially in the smaller and rapidly growing companies, there's so much going on that a company's leadership has to deal with just to manage their growth, manage the customer interaction, manage the change in entity structure, manage potentially or manage new competitors and new markets. They're really looking to somebody who can be that trusted advisor. And when a new compliance initiative comes up, you know, they don't necessarily have the time to go and read the, looking here, it's probably about 700 pages that you'd really have to read to totally understand the new statements on accounting standards, for example, or to read AS5 from the new auditing standards for SOX. They need somebody who can quickly understand their business and quickly help them navigate through these new requirements and set up the manual and automated systems they need to comply. So what I have found is as we're talking to a client about a new accounting system, our ability to talk about these new standards helps us differentiate MIS Group as a provider of a solution rather than just a provider of software. When you start talking about we offer a very robust network services offering, you start to talk about the technology component of the controls necessary for these compliance initiatives. And to be able to bring that into one conversation and be that one throat to choke, if you will, for accountability for that client has helped us gain a lot of accolades and a lot of new clients.
Great, thanks. So what I'd like to do is review the new risk assessment standards. These are auditing standards that were issued by the AICPA, and as you'll notice at the top of the screen, compliance is required in years beginning after December 16, 2006. So what this means, calendar years for 2007, management needs to provide the auditor with adequate information so he can do his audit work effectively. What I've done here is highlighted three standards. Actually, you'll see a fourth standard, which is kind of out of the range of the eight new assessment standards, but it also impacts the whole risk assessment standards themselves. First of all, SAS number 104. What this does, it takes the due professional care and actually raises it from the old level of reasonable assurance that auditors gave to a level of almost certain. So in other words, the external auditor is delivering a higher level of assurance on his financial statements. So that has an impact because he's got to be awful darn sure that those financials are accurate, otherwise his exposure will be much greater and, you know, it passed. Also, we've got SAS number 109, understanding the entity and its environment in assessing the risks of material misstatements. The auditor has to receive documentation on the client's internal environment so he can actually do a risk assessment of that. He truly needs to go into the detailed processes and understand the relationship between the financial transactions that are going into the financials. And SAS number 110 goes into his level of audit procedures required to assess these risks and evaluate the audit evidence that's obtained. Basically, you need to collect audit evidence not just on financial reporting accounts, but also on the internal controls that he's, you know, assuring that that are in place for that organization. SAS number 12 is the communication of those control weaknesses to people using the financial statements. So this is where he actually will deliver the message on those financial statement positions, but also the internal control weaknesses that client may have. So with that, you know, what does this actually mean to the private company, the audit firm, and the case of OMB A123, the actual governmental audit that's going on today? Chris, you've got a lot of detail, hands-on experience. Maybe you could review this for everyone listening.
So for a private or public company, that means now you need to be able to show your control environment documented. And generally, that is the requirement is the processes need to be demonstrated so that the context of that control can be understood by the auditor. Again, the evidence that the key financial controls are tested and reliable. The definition of key is varied over, especially over SOX, but generally, a key financial control is one that if it didn't execute properly, you would have a high probability of a material misstatement. Again, the proof and the evidence. It used to be that, especially in small companies, the audit would come up and the auditors would come in and say, hey, here's the adjustments that we think you need to make to get back on track based on your materiality, based on the accruals, et cetera. That is no longer going to be able to happen. The fact that the auditors are suggesting adjustments would, under new independence requirements, push them over that line. So the audit firm can provide guidance, but they cannot do the documentation. Previously you'd have a lot of auditors in, and they would do a flowchart of a process as part of gaining their own and demonstrating their own understanding to their own audit group. That is no longer the case as well. You have to use the client's documentation, and you have to do your audit procedures over that. So what does that mean for the audit firm? They have to provide their own, perform their own risk assessment on the client's control environment. And again, not just the financial accounts, but they're supposed to do an enterprise-wide assessment. They need to be able to test and collect evidence based on management's assessment, but they also have to make a determination whether or not they can rely on management's work or if they have to do their own re-performance. The standard of due care has increased, and there is the interpretation that you can no longer have a non-qualified audit opinion if you did not rely on internal corrosive controls. So again, that ratcheting the risk all the way up and saying you're not relying on controls and doing full bore testing of the numbers is not an approach that's acceptable anymore. And for a government entity that's undergoing an audit, they're going to be held to the same standard. Candidly, there's a lot of interpretation of who is really governmentally funded and is it material, the funding they get. And so I think that's going to be one of the areas that professional services firms are going to be able to advise clients that are in this situation and help them navigate through whether or not they're in or out of scope in terms of these initiatives.
So what I'd like to do is just give a high-level overview of what this COSO framework is. You know, one of the things that we see in all the different standards is everyone's recommending, hey, just follow the COSO standards. So the original COSO framework really focuses here, basically we've got a cube. Then we've got the new COSO, which is what is called the Enterprise Risk Management Framework. Over here, you'll notice we've added a couple of things. We've added a strategic row of blocks up here. We've also added objective setting, event identification, risk assessment is in both. Risk response is added inside here, control activities, information and communication and monitoring are in both blocks. So regardless of what standard you're using, they recommend to use at a minimum level the original COSO. Now you'll notice I've highlighted just the financial reporting section on the top part of the cube. In other words, just a sliver or one-third of the actual COSO framework. Generally, most people implementing for SOX, for the new FAS standards, that is really the key area that they're trying to focus on is, you know, let's get the compliance work done initially and let's comply. And they're documenting this in Word, Excel, and Visio, those types of fashions, and they're sitting out there. Anyway, if you do this with this perspective, you're going to satisfy probably the requirements of the external auditor that are required. But the issue is you probably really are not getting the true value out of taking this type of standard and actually improving the business with it. And Chris, why don't you kind of give some insights on the value add pieces of this COSO block?
Sure, Ken. I had the good fortune to be in the internal audit program in PepsiCo back in the mid-90s when they were very much on the leading edge of adopting COSO as a framework for internal audit. And during that time, it's interesting as I look at a lot of the talk around the water cooler and in the press about how onerous the requirements of Sarbanes-Oxley are. I think back to my time at PepsiCo when we were taking this approach at looking at the business and internal audit, and I have to scratch my head. I remember back to times when there were divisions and departments who were literally calling internal audit saying, hey, can this COSO thing to us next? Could we get up in line? Because they saw the value of being able to visually lay out their processes and understand them among different departments and across different levels. There were a lot of aha moments where management looked at what the operational procedures were actually happening, and there was a great deal of, when did we decide to do that, or I thought we were doing X, or that's an extra redundant step that these folks are doing over here. So there was a lot of value in being able to look at processes that way. Having an independent review of the risk of your business area and an evaluation of the controls helped people focus on understanding and spending time on the controls that were very important in their business and not having to spend so much time on the things that weren't. There were just accolades of, hey, this was one of the best exercises we've ever been through. We can't wait until our internal audit comes back. So I would challenge each of you, as you're out doing these kinds of projects, when your clients are, you know, talking about the, you know, the onerousness of it, the cost of it, to think in terms of, how can I really use this foundation and framework to really provide business value in the compliance framework, but in the pure business process improvement value as well.
So I guess by taking a compliance standard that all these companies need to do, probably all of us CPAs and VARs that are out there watching this today have clients that get audits, but to actually be able to take a compliance standard and then actually leverage that work that you're doing there and turn it into improvement opportunities for the client is really what makes this value proposition for the end user and the big differentiator for a firm such as yourself at MIS Group, Chris. I mean, that's what it sounds putting this together can do for an organization.
Absolutely. As long as you're open to the idea that, you know, compliance is just another business requirement, just like having enough cash in the bank, just like having to conform with HIPAA, just like paying your taxes on time. Understanding these requirements, having them modeled, and automating them or having the manual processes well documented so that they make sense and that they work in an effective and efficient fashion is just the right way to do business, I believe.
Great. So what I'd like to do is take you through 5 easy steps to compliance and beyond. Step number 1 is laying out the control environment framework that you're going to leverage for the actual client. Number 2, identify the key processes within your key cycle areas. Number 3, identify significant control objectives for the processes. Number 4, assess the financial reporting risks. Number 5, identify and test the controls that are going to mitigate those significant risks. So literally, these 5 easy steps are going to walk you through the first phase of that compliance piece. So what I'm going to do is walk through 5 steps here, and as we walk through, we're actually going to show you how that information can be easily captured and, you know, probably 70% complete before you start by using a tool like eProcess Manager. So the first thing is to identify the framework and methodology to use. The most common components out there are COSO, ERM, COBIT. There's a couple of other IT strategies out there that you can use as frameworks, but those are predominantly the ones that are recommended for the financial reporting projects that we're talking about. We're actually going to capture the entity-level risk within the organization. And this little diagram kind of shows you what we've been talking about. You actually have a compliance requirement over here in the financial reporting area that you've got to satisfy SOX, the SAS requirements, could be OMB, You know, there's many compliance regulations out there for financial reporting today, and that is really the compliance area. When you start moving into the operational area, now you start getting business improvement, return on investment. You know, what if people could actually take compliance initiatives and actually get a return on investment within 60 days? Do you think that's going to excite people to do business with you as a CPA or VAR? You know, it sure would be me if they brought me a value proposition along with this satisfying this compliance standard. The other thing we're going to do is be able to stay out of trouble with the government. In other words, we're going to identify within the processes, we're actually going to identify governmental compliance standards. And the last piece that really starts adding value is the ability to align your control environment to the business strategy. What this is going to do, it's going to start getting you operational team alignment. In other words, your sales, your consulting, you know, operations. What if everything was working in synergy within an organization? Wouldn't that be nice? All your clients have all these issues, so really, by satisfying a compliance initiative, you're really helping them build a good management environment within their organization. And that leads us to step number two. So the first step was really identifying the framework and the methodology we're going to use, which is really laying out all the key business cycles within an organization. These could actually be functional areas. But you're going to lay out how does, you know, what are the different cycles within this organization. The next step, step number two, is to identify the key processes. In other words, what makes the business work? So now we've organized it by key cycles. The next step is to identify within the cycle what are the key processes that that cycle goes through. Once we identify the key processes, we're going to identify the purpose, scope, and policies. We'll identify the people within the process. This could be authors, reviewers, and approvers. So in other words, you can actually manage the changes, you know, that are made to the processes. We're going to establish what we call goals and objectives, either control or performance objectives. Control objectives are more compliance-oriented objectives. Performance or more operational or strategic type objectives. But what we're going to do is take those objectives and align them throughout the organization back to the strategy of the organization. We're also going to identify the risk at the process level. We're going to identify control activities that make sure those events don't happen. We're going to map the details. And we're also going to align this to our transactional systems. This goes back to the point Chris made that IT is very critical in this process because we want to understand the processes and the financial transactions. We want to understand the technology behind them and make sure that we have adequate controls over there. So you'll see how this literally pulls all these components together. And the last level that we can optionally do is identify compliance or performance indicators within that process. So it looks something like this. If I'm in revenue to cash, we go through order entry, shipping, dispatch, billing and invoicing, cash receipt, customer additions credit. Anyway, we align all the key processes that impact that cycle. We capture the purpose, scope, and narrative, and then we start establishing the control objectives over here, which take us to the next level. So now we're going to establish our control objectives. You know, what are the desired outcomes of this process? And these control objectives, they'll be financial reporting objectives, operational objectives, governmental compliance, strategic objectives, or possibly confidentiality. There's many different standards you can apply. By taking a framework or a standard, applying them to your processes, you're making sure your business is working the way that you want them to. Very often you do this based on what we call assertions. Basically, these are key things that we want to make sure our objectives are targeting, like timeliness of the transactions. Are the transactions complete? Are they accurate? So this basically would give you a hit list that literally walks you through objective setting at the actual process level. We're also going to align these to how do these processes and objectives impact our financials, how do they impact customers, employees, innovation, and compliance. So in other words, when we're done, you'll notice those of you that are familiar with a balanced scorecard, we're actually starting to organize our processes in alignment with our objectives of the higher level organizational goals. So this works, literally I click over on the goals tab. I can actually see a list of my control objectives that are out here, all the way from ensuring duties are well segregated to ensure invoices are timely and accurately calculated. Anyway, you'll notice I have financial reporting objectives. I have some operational objectives out here. So I can literally go in and drill into those goals and objectives. The nice thing is, you'll notice we have a template list. If I've not selected objectives, I can have my standard objectives that I want to apply to my processes. I can literally go through and pick and choose, you know, which ones apply to this process. So you don't have to think about what do I need to do. So in here, we've got 10 standards listed. And right now, I've got several selected. I just click OK, and it actually preloads the screen. And now I can drill in and tailor this objective for the specific process that I'm on. So you can actually take staff-level people and actually walk them through this process, delivering manager or senior-level results for clients very effectively. Step number four is actually doing the risk assessment. Inside here, once I've identified the objectives, now I want to identify what can go wrong with those objectives. So these can be financial reporting risks. They could be operational risk, which are dollar. Operational risk could also be quality, employee safety. You know, what is the risk of governmental non-compliance? And then also, does this process present any risk to the business strategy of the organization? So you'll notice as we're building the components, we're keeping in alignment with the COSO framework. Anyway, the key thing with the risk assessment is we're going to identify the probability and the significance of this risk. And then lastly, we're going to identify the impact on the financial reporting elements, the operational elements. So this might be, what is the impact of this process on cash? What is the impact on receivables? Also, what is the impact of this process on profitability? So you set up your different impact elements, and then you can apply them in all these different areas. What you're ending up doing is building a cost versus value type structure. So what I can do is identify the potential cost of the risk, and it gives me a guideline on the value of investment that I should spend on controls to reduce that risk. So it really is doing a, you know, process or business assessment on really what should I be spending the company resources on within each process at the process level. So how this works, if I actually go over here to the shipping and invoicing, click on the risk, as I'm drilling down through here, I've got my risk category. So we have operational risk, financial reporting risk. I can drill into it by just clicking on the little button over here. I also have a template list that I can apply standard risk to any process also, just like we saw earlier. So we're going to categorize the risk. I'm going to go ahead and drill in. And there's a four-step process as you go through here. You're going to identify the risk. You're going to categorize the risk in these three different areas. We're going to align the risk with the control objective. We can align it at the process objective level all the way up to the corporate level. We're going to actually analyze the risk, and then we do our assessment on that risk. If I click over on the action button, many times when you identify the risk, you identify that we may have a control weakness. In other words, I don't have adequate controls in place. When I click on my action items, I can actually once again go in and select from a template. What the template allows me to do is have my methodology built in here. So here I've got my risk and control methodology, and it aligns all the things we need to do inside here, and I can just select like remediate control weaknesses, click on OK, and it preloads it into the system. I can now go in and assign this remediation item to a specific person. I will tailor the description up here, but now when I print out my progress guide, I can see all my remediation issues that we need to deal with within different cycles, processes, and I can see percent complete. Literally, what you're doing is building your project plan right in the business processes themselves. This is a continuous improvement accountability strategy that is automatically driven by the system. Once I do that, the next step is to identify the actual control activities that you've implemented in your system or need to implement. So now we'll go to the control activities, step number 5, and this kind of wraps up this step. We're going to identify preventative, detective, or corrective or reactive type controls. These can be technology or manual controls. Probably for the middle market companies, probably 80 to 90% of their controls today are manual based. As technology moves forward, more and more people are using technology within the to make controls more efficient and effective. But still, to this day, most are manual. So the opportunity is to help clients build effective controls by automating a lot of those, and you'll save a lot of money. And that's part of the whole strategy to get quick improvements quickly. Anyway, we're going to evaluate the effectiveness of the controls through testing. And once again, we're going to identify any remediation activities that are required. So inside here, we're going to document the control information. We're going to identify this control and what assertion it applies to. Once again, you can build action items at the control level. I can also go over here. You'll notice we'll track audit trail of all this information. We can design sign-offs so people actually need to sign off on their controls. One of the key areas is one control activity can apply to many risks. So if I'm doing a bank reconciliation in the cash management process, I can use that bank rec control, apply it to risks of the cash receipts over in the AR cycle. I could apply that to cash payments over in AP, over in payroll. So in other words, you can take one control activity and apply it many places in the organization. But this way, I can look up my bank rec and I can see where does that control, how does it impact other people's processes. I can also then go into my testing mode and literally build the test plan for this particular control activity. So I actually define it. I'm going to set my objectives. I'll track evidence and issues inside here. And once again, I'm going to identify what assertions this test is trying to test for. So that pulls all the capture of the data. Now, most of that information today, when people go out and document a control environment, if it's documented, they'll do it in Word, they'll do it in Excel, they'll do it in Visio. The nice thing is we literally walk you through the whole process, and you click a button, and it publishes it out. And Chris, maybe you can jump in here, kind of give an idea of the value of having everything encapsulated in one area with the ability to publish versus having all these different documents sitting out there.
Well, there's a couple of areas, Kent. One is if you're in front of an audit committee and you're presenting either a control or working through a potential deficiency, and the Word document doesn't match, the flow chart doesn't match the risk and control spreadsheet, you have just created a lot of extra work for yourself, notwithstanding the embarrassment and loss of credibility in front of your client. I speak from unfortunate experience. I've got a little scar tissue around that. So that being able to have it all synchronized and being able to publish it once and have everything be the same version and know who has reviewed or not reviewed and approved what will save you countless hours of pain, embarrassment, and rework. The other thing that I find a little more tactically is that the structure of the tool set, while it's very flexible, it also imposes some standardization so that when you publish a flowchart, for example, you don't have to worry about which staff person did it and were they in the mood that a blue box meant this and a red box meant that, and, you know, did they go top to bottom or did they go left to right. It's much easier to have the structure of this tool drive standardization of your documentation for eventual review by your the manager on the job. Or I think there's a long-term look. Say, for example, you're doing an audit and you're reviewing this documentation under peer review. The fact that it's all standardized, the fact that it's all in one place, the fact that you don't have to go back and navigate three different versions of a document potentially, I think greatly lessens the risk of the auditor under the potential of peer review.
Great. And I just walked through some of those samples. There's, you know, literally if you went through the documents that are available at the click of a button, it's almost endless because of the filtering capabilities that you can do with the information. But I always say it's nothing like having the information in a database. And we even give you the ability to hang your custom forms or reports right off the screen, so you can actually add your own reports, that type of thing, that integrate into the system also. This happens to be... Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, in my experience, being able to find out that there was a change needed in the way a control function, you needed to be able to change the documentation in that, to be able to go back to the flowchart and go back to the risk and control matrix and go back to the word narrative and the eventual controls could take anywhere from 1 hour to 2 days, depending on if you had to wait on somebody, if you played phone tag and had to leave somebody a voicemail, if they got the wrong version when you emailed it. Being able to change it one time in this tool and publish it, you can do that in 15 to 30 minutes and have all the communication done. So again, the efficiency of which you perform the work for your clients is enhanced greatly using a tool set like this.
Great. Anyway, the neat thing about this is, like, for example, I don't know how many of you out there have actually seen a risk control matrix in Excel. Very cumbersome to navigate, to find information. Anyway, the neat thing here is you can literally go in and select the cycles, the processes you want to publish out. Let's say we want to send a risk control matrix to our external CPA for the revenue to cash. I can go in and select revenue to cash, and it'll publish out all the risk and controls out there, and I can literally click on the little email button and it'll actually email that to my external auditor. What this contains is all the risks, the control activities. I'm sorry, this is the risk, the control objective, and the control activities with my score and my assertions that those controls are trying to satisfy. The key thing is I can see the risk. I can see, are we using preventative or detective-oriented controls, but I can get a good feel just from this single document how things are working. If I want to navigate over to billing and invoicing, I just click on billing and invoicing, and I'm right down in that section. So navigation and the ability to filter out what you want to whom is very critical. This is also one reason why you can use this environment for not just financial reporting, but operational objectives. I could filter out my financial reporting objectives because I don't want to inundate my external auditor with my operational stuff. I only want them to see my financial reporting risk and controls. So I can literally do that and publish that to him without having to go to another spreadsheet or something like that. A little earlier we talked about managing the methodology. Literally, we plug in the action items that need to happen. You'll notice here, this happened to be a SOX project. I applied my methodology to the process and assigned it to people so I know exactly what the status of the project is. So you can tweak your methodology that fits exactly the way you implement this process and apply it. This is perfect for implementing software. In other words, if you go through multiple stages, we're going to install, we're going to train, we're going to pilot, and then we're going to go live. And maybe there's even customization on certain processes. You map that out. If I'm the project manager, I know exactly where the client's at, where we're at with the things to do, you know, either implementing software, implementing, you know, documentation process for SOX or the OMB. It gives you a lot of visibility of what's actually happening as far as our actions go. So, you know, Chris, I mean, do you want to comment on any of these other initiatives we've got here, methodologies? I know you guys use this for your implementation methodologies in addition to, you know, the process work.
Correct. We use it for laying out the plan for implementing accounting software, CRM software, and it's a very effective tool to be able to use that and manage it. We publish to Microsoft Project to be able to see the Gantt chart, but I find it's much easier to capture progress and actuals against a plan using this tool than that. Sarbanes-Oxley-COSO, we've got customers who are using this to manage their ISO initiatives as well. So I go back to what I think about this, and I've looked at a lot of these tools. What I find is that if you're looking at a tool that was built to drive SOX compliance, by implementing that and using that tool to do that, at the end of the initiative, you've achieved SOX compliance, and that's it. What I like about the way that EPM is structured, it was built to be a business process improvement tool, and it looks at compliance, SOX, for example, as another business requirement. So it really provides you, once you've done your SOX in this, you can go back to your business processes and look at them from a pure business process improvement and a business performance measurement and management perspective as well. And I'll be candid, I have never seen that in another tool set of this kind.
Well, thanks, Chris. What I'd like to point out here, what I would like to point out here on this slide is, if you take a look at, we did a client survey, and if you take a look at the actual project of doing SOX work, and this is pure compliance work, you'll notice it goes beyond finance. You know, we've got IT, operations, sales, HR, marketing. We've done some OMB work that included statistical data, you know, from really, you know, different operational groups. The key point here is when you're working with financial information, the source of the transactions are generally coming from somewhere else. So you're not focused just in the financial area of a company. You're really getting into the operations. Operations is where the transactions occur. The main point is that's where the control activities need to lie. And that's also why this initiative, if you're just doing it to comply, you're cutting yourself short because you're dealing with all the different areas of the company. Why not start helping clients understand the value of building operational controls in addition to just financial reporting controls? From a CPA perspective, I think it really moves you more toward that trusted advisor instead of, you know, he doesn't just look at things from the numbers game. He actually helps me try to improve my business. From a VARS perspective, you know, instead of just the IT guy ask for questions and when my order entry isn't working or I hire a new staff person, he kind of looks at you as a trusted advisor and, you know, giving him guidance to make his operation work more effectively.
Kent, let me add one of the points on looking just beyond financial. Is in my experience, I've seen a lot of the business process challenges, either in efficiency and cost or control effectiveness, happen where departments hand off to each other or business functions hand off to each other. Again, being able to have a process and visually look at it across those silos or across those chasms is a fantastic area to focus on looking at your client's business and being able to help them identify where things are either falling through the cracks or potentially control is happening one time in one department and then again in another department. It's pretty easy if you take a business enterprise view of that to look at that duplicate control and be able to engineer it out of existence as well as its associated costs.
Great. You know, Chris, how many times do you run into a client that you talk about these initiatives and they say, you know, we're too busy putting out a fire, only to find out that that fire happens like every week you call in there or every other week, and the real strategy should be putting the root cause of that fire out so it doesn't continuously impact management so much.
Absolutely, that is a challenge, and you and I, and I think everybody on the call probably runs into that every day. And so there is that objective viewpoint that I think we can bring. The challenge that I see is if you're using, Visio, Word, Excel, it's very hard to present that picture to your client that they can see in one map what the challenge is. Again, I think a tool like this gives you the ability to do that much quicker and to help a client get over that hurdle of the constant, I'm too busy putting out the fire to build the building, or, it's hard to remember that your objective was to drain the swamp when you're up to your earlobes and alligators. This tool set can automate the process of getting them over that hump. And I've seen a lot of what I'll call eureka moments when you've gone in and documented some of these things. And, not only do you get them over the hump and you help them put out the fire, but you give them a sense of comfort and credibility that you're there for them to provide real value and that you're there as an advisor for the long term.
So on this beyond step, this is where we start focusing in on operational objectives and strategic objectives, understanding the risk of not accomplishing those objectives, identifying and implementing performance controls, and by doing that, identifying what are the performance indicators within that process that are going to tell me whether it's working effectively, and then monitor and react. And the monitoring and reacting are what we're talking about on the firefighting. What if you could detect something before it becomes a fire? By understanding the root cause, that's where this strategy takes you. So you truly get a business working more effectively. So complying is the first phase generally for most of our clients because that's the immediate concern. But where our model takes you is to actually capture the vision, the mission, the culture of a company, establish strategic goals and objectives, identifying high-level risks that may potentially impact the client, but then going down to the process and actually aligning the process level back to the strategy. In other words, if I want to execute my strategy, I have to make sure my business processes are in alignment with it or it's not going to happen. Great example, if I want to give the best customer service out there, in a particular area, can I do that if I let the phone ring, 20 times before we answer it? No, our processes have to align with the business strategy, and we've got to be able to detect and monitor those things to make sure that they're working effectively. And we do that by applying KPIs at a performance level and then being able to continuously monitor and react to negative events that are happening, within the business. And we'll show you how this all pulls together, and we're going to kick it off by identifying key performance indicators within the process. Now, you've had some experience. You want to just kind of hit a high level on some of the, you know, some of the concepts here, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I think you talked about alignment. I think one of the things that you have to think about in key performance indicators is are they relevant? Is the data available and reliable? And so you start to look at things like you mentioned your phone call. You know, if you have a high customer service strategy, and you understand that, being able to know where the data is to evaluate that is something that the foundational mapping of your business processes helps you identify which systems and at what points in the process is that data timely and relevant. Then you have the ability to build monitors to go get that data, pull it into a framework and a tool set that will format it for you and do the analytical calculations and the comparatives and show it to you in a format where you can look at trends and you can look at are you moving better against a measure and moving worse against a measure, helps you as a business leader or helps you as a business advisor show a business leader how to take these measurements and turn them into real bottom line results and help them understand how that maps.
So in summary, it's really understanding the process, making sure it's working effectively, but then identifying either input, throughput, or output to be able to measure to make sure that the process is working the way that we want it to. So I'm going to just walk through what we call our dashboard here. What this is where we can collect KPIs. The neat thing is you can actually do this by perspective, so I can get a compliance scorecard, a customer-oriented scorecard, financial-related scorecard. So as we're building goals and objectives and KPIs, we're aligning them inside the system, and I can get all these different views and a very colorful view of what's working, what's not. So I can see what our different scorecards and all of our different perspectives are. I can drill down. As I drill down, I always see one layer deeper over here. I see the trending information. I just want to take a look at some of the different views, though, like a cycle view. What if I could click in and actually see, you know, which business cycles are working effectively within the company? If I'm monitoring input, throughputs, and outputs, I can easily detect possible errors and or problems in order management, in the shipping area, collection. So it truly gives me a management perspective. And it's kind of nice sometimes not to just look at things from a people perspective, but a process perspective. Also, being able to go in from my high-level strategies down to my cycle and process-level goals and objectives, being able to roll up goals and objectives all the way up to the revenue level is pretty exciting, all the way down to the people. So we're truly aligning your people, your processes, and your technology. It's just like having children. You know, what would you do if you didn't get grade cards? You would have no guidance on how things are working. Well, just like a business, what we're going to do is convert the performance of people, you know, from all different units of measures into a common measuring concept, so you can truly get a grade card on what strategies are on track, what processes, you know, what positions. Like here I've got my key management team, and I can see exactly who's doing well and how they're doing, all those different ways. And really the next thing is, you know, once I've got those in place, and you touched on this, the ability to actually monitor any of your transactional data that's out there, you know, it'd be one thing if you had to key this data in, but if you could automate the collection and alignment and know that it's in alignment with your actual data out there, is a huge value add. Chris, I'll let you touch on this one real quick.
Again, when you're showing your clients how to look at this, some of the areas that you focus on, obviously, you know, in financial reporting, revenue cutoff, WIP reconciliation, inventory and inventory cutoff are areas of focus, and to see how those are working. operational monitoring subcontractor invoices, being able to monitor price changes and understand the impacts that those are going to have throughout the process and how that would eventually hit the financial reporting, looking at turnaround time on an estimate, for example, or in your ability to get from a quote to an order, being able to look at that. Looking at things like compliance OSHA, the number of accident-free days is a pretty common measure. The return to work time, compliance around SOX, the number of material weaknesses or significant deficiencies, being able to model and evaluate how you are performing against the auditing standards and being able to anticipate what your auditor is going to be asking you versus just reacting to it, and being able to confidently present your control environment to them helps them very quickly get more comfort around the controls and management's oversight of those controls in an organization.
You know, I was just talking to one of my clients and their external auditor today, and what we had done, Chris, which was a phenomenal payback, and this was a financial reporting control that literally, saved the client. You know, it was literally probably $20,000 to $40,000 a month in accounting time. They had 152 companies. They had to they were manually reconciling those every single month. They were basically plugging the numbers because of the transaction load. What we did is we built, and it only took us about a little over a week to build the monitor for this, but we auto-reconciled every night with the actual list of anything that was out of sync, and corrective entries were actually done that next day. That basically saved them high-end accounting people that understood how to do those reconciliations, find the transactions. About at the end of the month, they were spending two accountants, higher-level accountants, literally 2 weeks trying to reconcile, and they would plug the number. Now that whole process is automated on a daily basis. But that's the kind of value that you can find in a lot of different companies out there. They weren't that large of a company. They just had 152 different companies. They had government funds that were coming in, and they needed to build good controls in there. So the value add of the monitor piece is extremely huge.
Let me add to that, Ken. What I don't want people to miss is that in order to be able to put together a story like that and be able to show that a client has gained that kind of a return from that, you have to go back to the beginning and understand that the basic understanding of the processes and the basic understanding of the controls that this exercise and this tool set provides gives you the foundation to do that. Without having done that, that company could have been just clicking along the way that they were, never realized that there was an opportunity, and didn't have the foundational and the design to be able to programmatically automate that opportunity. I really want to challenge people to think that way when you're out looking at your clients. That is an example of being able to take compliance beyond into pure business process improvement.
Thanks for pointing that out, Chris. So this is just an example how we build those monitors and alerts. It's a completely automated process. You need to have the transactional systems that support this. Your processes also have to be in order, too. One of the key things Chris brought out is transactions need to be timely. They need to be accurate. So this is generally a phase two part of the project, or a combination of key controls that you need to implement as you're implementing that. This is where one of the key big value adds comes in when you start building these types of monitors and controls for clients. Anyway, we're getting ready to wrap up here, and the main thing is this process is very easy. Templates make it a lot easier. If you had to start from scratch, this would be as daunting as doing it in Word and Excel and Visio. You know, you'll notice we have a Timberline template out here. This actually is one of MIS's templates that they built. But we've got many partners, many different experts out there, so we have a lot of different template models that that you can leverage when you're implementing this system and these strategies over at clients, whether it be frameworks, business models, technology integration, and you can actually use multiple templates in one installation. But we try and make it easy, and what we tell people is a template will get you anywhere to 60 to 70% out of the box. Depending on the initiative, that type of thing, it gives you a huge head start. It's like doing a 100-yard dash. If I can start on the 60 to 70-yard line, I'm probably going to be able to beat almost anyone in a 100-yard dash. So anyway, that's the kind of advantage you get with this. You know, this was an, you know, and based on your experience, this would be a good slide for you to cover, Chris.
Yeah, I think as we're talking about this, one of the things I'd like to do is provide everybody a little focus on, as you're doing this, areas to focus on in discussions with your clients where they're probably having the most pain. So you notice the Lord and Benoit study. Leading material weaknesses reported with companies less than 100 million. Information technology came up very high in the ranking. And what that means is there are controls that are necessary around backup and recovery and around whether or not the data center is locked. And there were some companies that had challenges in that. But it was a tremendous number of scenarios. Like I had a client who said to me, you know, there was a control that was an exception report. And they said, you know, if a control bust happens, I would get it would come out on this exception report, and then we'd be able to react to it. And based on the timing, we'd have the ability to go back and recapture that, and there would not be a material misstatement. And I said, okay, well, how has that been working for you? And they said, well, that report has never come out, so the control is working effectively because I've never had an exception. And so when I went back and talked to the technology folks, I asked them about that, and they said, oh, that's funny, we turned that report off. So you had the operational, you know, folks in accounting thinking that they were relying on a control, thinking they had a safety net that IT had actually turned off without, again, without being able to map through the business process and have that conversation facilitated between both of those. There was no way to identify that that control could have actually been a very big risk. Competency and training of accounting personnel comes up a lot. It gives the folks on the phone the ability to, I think, provide additional value-added services in terms of training, in terms of helping them in interim periods, helping them during closes, et cetera. The design of controls and lack of compensating controls, I think a tremendous area for us as a profession to help companies advise them in terms of what is a control and what is an effective control. Revenue recognition shouldn't surprise anybody. That's always a challenge, and that came up pretty high in that. The financial statement close process of when are your cutoffs and who reviews what before it goes to the street or to whatever entities are going to be looking at that. Inadequate account reconciliation, that is one of those unfortunately, arduous and mundane tasks, it often gets put to the back of the burner when everybody's fighting those fires that we're talking about. Consolidation mergers, intercompany accounts, I've seen a lot of that, especially around companies that have joint ventures and who's actually responsible for oversight and management of the control and who's relying on that. If you're part of a joint venture, getting that understanding nailed down has proved to be very interesting. It's almost like the two baseball players in the outfield both yelling, you've got it, and the ball hits the ground, and unfortunately, you know, the base runner comes in safe. Just the overall control environment, there was a lot of challenges in this around things like segregation of duties, things like overall tone at the top, in terms of taking control seriously, in terms of having the right structure around internal audit, audit committees, boards, et cetera. and then Treasury with all the cash sweeping and then the wire transfers was another area that came up very high in terms of material weaknesses. So again, just a little bit of experience and what's been happening in clients. Hopefully it provides you a little head start in focusing on areas that you can provide value for your clients.
You know, I get a common question just based on these, and we're going to be wrapping up here in the next couple minutes, but I get a common question like, what size of company is, you know, is it right to actually help them build a good control environment? And I will actually say we've got companies from $2 million on up. In fact, the most valuable letter I ever got from a client that implemented EPM was actually a $2 million company. I literally got a letter from them saying that you know, our consultants and our tool actually revolutionized their business in a week. So the main concept here is, you know, there's actually a lack of controls within smaller businesses, and really the strategy of helping small businesses build compensating controls. Great example is segregation of duties that you brought up, Chris. I don't know how many times that, you know, people think because I don't have segregation of duties, there's nothing I can do. Well, what you do is you build compensating controls. So this tool and strategy doesn't just impact the 50 to 100 million to the billion dollar company. The value of this is anyone that's trying to build an effective business and really understand, you know, how the business operates, align it with strategy, and really building a good control environment for their organization. So from your perspective, you know, the actual you know, what is the value proposition as a, you're a VAR, but you could be a CPA actually implementing this. What is the value to the external auditor and the client themselves that you talk about, Chris?
Well, you know, the first bullet, helping clients document in weeks, not months, that helps me competitively. If I'm up against a competitor and they're saying it's going to take somebody 6 months to be able to get there, and I'm able to demonstrate that I've been able to do it in 2 months, and it's referenceable, and they can make that call, I'm going to win that work. I'm going to do less work because it's in 2 months instead of six, but I would rather do 100% of 2 months' worth of work than 0% of 6 months' work. You get the ability to have things happen like Kent talked about in the intercompany reconciliations. Excuse me, and revolutionizing a $2 million business, those, when you can do that for a company, they become a lighthouse client for you, and generally they're pretty willing to take a call from a prospect to be able to credentialize that you can get it done for them. Excuse me. You mentioned the exception-based monitoring environment in terms of the compensating controls. You can help a company solve the unsolvable. If you've got one person who is setting up vendors and that one person is also responsible for the checks, you cannot have segregation of duties in that, but you can put automated monitoring controls in place to evaluate whether or not a control bust, if you will, had happened. So you can't do it proactively, but you can do it reactively. You can do that for a lot less expensive than hiring an additional person. Providing the external auditor with a quick and effective understanding of the client's control environment. Clients sure appreciate it when the external auditors say, you know what, that took me less time at your company because you had a standardized, automated approach for me to be able to look at your work and evaluate your control and get to the comfort level that I needed to, and therefore I'm spending less time with you, and therefore I am liking you as a client and potentially charging you less money. We talked about reducing the external auditor's risk. Under peer review, having everything in one place, not having to go back and recreate which version of which document was relevant at the time and being able to track who approved and who may not have approved a document, I think provides a company under peer review a lot of effectiveness and efficiency in getting through that and getting the peer reviewer comfortable more quickly.
Thanks. And I would just like to summarize this CPA and VAR value. This is the VARs to the attendees here today. What if you could increase your competitiveness? In other words, when you're actually going out to that client site and you're trying to get a project to help them document their compliance, what if you could actually do it for $10,000 less than the competitor? You know, so timeliness on this. And not only that, you're going to add value to that whole process also. Improve sustainability. This has been one of the top issues with existing SOX type clients, and it's going to become the same thing. If people try and cut corners up front by using Word, Excel, and Visio, you're going to have the same sustainability issue. I have literally viewed over 100, I'm going to say Word, Excel, and Visio flowcharts or some combination of from some big, you know, Fortune 500 companies, over 100 companies. Every single one I've taken a look at has been out of sync when it comes to aligning them up. There's just no way using those three different documents you can keep them in alignment. This was even year one. You'd start looking at year two when you change one and don't change the other. The nice thing with EPM is everything is always in sync with each other. So you're not, your internal auditors, your people aren't managing documents. You're actually using the tool to help manage the business. Also, deliver performance improvement. I pretty much guarantee anyone that understands how to go about this approach, and we help educate you on this, you can deliver significant value within 30 days by just identifying key business issues that they're having, understanding their transactional system, making sure that they're collecting the data timely. I will almost guarantee you'll be able to deliver a return on investment in 30 days or less. Also, reduce deployment time. In other words, having that template, you know, here we are coming to the end of the year. I would say probably, you know, 5% of the businesses that should be complying with this new SaaS standard are probably ready to go with it, and they're actually testing their controls. So in other words, there's going to be a big push at the tail end of this year. We got to put something in place. Well, because our deployment time is so quick and efficient, it's going to position you where you can satisfy clients very, you know, very timely, probably not doing the adequate job of the, you know, that you need to, but at least get them positioned where they can start working on a control environment that's going to be effective. And really, helping the client improve their control environment will increase their bottom line, it'll increase their customer satisfaction, and it'll help them align their entire organization, kind of getting it hitting on all four cylinders. And what this does for you, it creates a true differentiation in the marketplace. There will be no one that really can compete with you on the deliverables that you're going to be able to offer here. So, that's the proposition. To get the competitive edge in the marketplace, whether you're a CPA or VAR, you probably have actually seen people or had people talking to you about these initiatives. Anyway, I've actually got a little after 10:15, so we're going to go ahead and wrap up. Now, one of the things that we do have up on the screen right now, you can get a hold of Aggie Hertel at this telephone number, the 866-590-4EPM. Chris's contact information is over at the MIS group, is also listed on here. Email addresses are on there. Our websites are on there. Aggie will be following up with everyone to figure out next steps, whether there's interest in getting involved with a partner program that we have available. Also, if you need CPE credit for this session, we will actually send you your CPE certificate, and all you need to do is email Sharon at sbonerich@t1mas.com. I'll leave this on the screen for a while, and fill in your name, certificate number, company, phone number, and email, and we will get that distributed over the next day or so. Anyway, I want to thank everyone, especially you, Chris, and Aggie, and everyone that attended, and hopefully this was very informative and will help you satisfy the compliance requirements for your clients. Thank you, everyone.